You are listening to a virtually speaking podcast.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 59. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great.
Feeling great. Why are you feeling great? Anything good? Is it the cold weather? Oh, no, you're in Houston. You don't have cold weather.
No, it's totally cold. It's freezing. It's like 70, 4 degrees outside. I've got my jacket on and
nice. So anything fun this weekend? Nothing or
going to Baylor homecoming for a football game. And then I got to go to Dallas this weekend, actually tomorrow. So be some family. So what did you do this week, Pete?
What did I do this weekend? Oh, I'm glad you asked. Let's see. I got to see Florida State play Duke college football. That was a great game. That was Saturday. But then Sunday, my daughter and I, there was a rock group coming through town, a little small group called the Foo Fighters. And yeah, my daughter and I got to go see them play.
Oh, I hate you.
I'm not sure if you've heard of them. Oh, don't be a hater, John. Nah, the Foo Fighters been around for 22 years, one of my favorite groups. And yeah, so I got to see them play for 3.5 hours. Played all the hits and a lot of their new songs from their album Concrete and Gold. Great concert. John, usually I like to say that you're my hero, but this week, David Grohl and the Foo Fighters were definitely my hero. So anyway, today we're going to talk about something that's almost as cool as the Foo Fighters, and that is support. And joining us this week to talk about support in different fashions is one of our very own from VMware, Mr. Francis Daly. Francis, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Pete. Thanks for having me. I don't have any Foo Fighters on in the background, but I'll try to get something there in the next few minutes.
I appreciate that. Might be more interesting
than support.
I would definitely appreciate that. You know, everybody should have their own background music. I think that makes for a good podcast. Also joining us for this week on the podcast is one of our customers from Verizon, I'll let him tell you about all the things that he does, is Nick Wilson. Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, well, thank you. Great to be here again.
Yeah, so let's do some intros and let's do some backgrounds here. Starting with you, Francis, what do you do at VMware?
So I'm a senior staff technical training specialist, and I work in a department in VMware called the VMware Technical Support University, and we're under the education services. So what we do is we create training for our technical support staff. So under education services, we have customer-facing training. And when people don't actually go and listen to, and learn everything on that customer training and things go wrong, they talk to our technical support staff. And we're the guys that create that training and train our technical support staff. So we're actually quite lucky because from a training perspective, we actually go and we work with the guys in tech support. We see actual use cases. We actually jump in and try to resolve cases now and then as well. And we feed that back into the company. And we also try to feed that back out to our customers as often as possible as well. So it's a really cool place to be.
Yeah, sounds it. And you got a really interesting accent. Are you from Texas?
Yeah, I'm from the south of Texas. Yeah.
I'm from
Cork, Ireland, and we're just after our first hurricane. So feeling pretty cool today, you know.
You're wearing your badge of honor that you survived a hurricane. Well done.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, the next guy's probably been through more than his share of hurricanes coming from Houston. Nick, tell us about what you're doing these days.
Hi. So, like hurricane-wise? Or?
Well, if you want, that's fine. But I was thinking more about your job.
Oh, yeah, that little thing. So I work for Verizon Enterprise Services, and I am in the travel and retail vertical. I specialize mostly in airlines. And what we do is we build, customized management models and customized monitoring models to meet whatever the customer's demands are, and then integrate with whatever their processes are for either staff augs or operational monitoring or, incident, handling incidents and managing crises.
So to be clear on incidents, you mean like, you know, a ticketing system going down, not someone getting drug off an airplane who shouldn't, right?
Yeah. More like, hey, the airline's down and we got to, you know, ground all flights situations.
Wow. Yeah, Nick does some pretty exciting stuff. As a matter of fact, John and I had an opportunity to catch up with him at VMworld, and we've got that one sitting in the can. We're going to add that. It was very, very specific to some automation stuff that they're doing over there, and we're going to add that to one of our upcoming automation podcasts, so look forward to that. But yeah, I'm really interested. When we decided to talk about support and hear about some of the tips and ideas on how to do support well, John and I immediately thought of you, considering some of the stories that we've heard, you know, from you and your peers. So thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be here.
All right. Well, Francis, why don't we start with you? I'd love to hear. You've been doing a lot of good stuff. You blog a lot. I've read a lot of your blogs around vSAN, and you've been doing some support videos out there as well for how to architect vSAN and how to troubleshoot vSAN. A lot of cool stuff out there. So I imagine, even though you don't work in the front lines of support, but you're training those guys, I would imagine that you've got some key issues that might come up a lot and some input on those.
Absolutely, yeah. So we've been doing the videos for the VMware Learning Zone. So within the VMware Learning Zone, you can see videos on some troubleshooting tips where we'll say I might have a PuTTY session to an ESX server and showing how to find we'll say on older versions of vSAN how to find firmware versions and how to find all these different types of issues. So you can take a look at that. But with regards to some of the issues that we have seen in support, I guess our biggest one is unsupported environments. That's probably the number one call driver in support. And what it is it's kind of like building a house, and if you haven't put your windows in yet and you just go straight onto eBay and just buy any window and it comes back and it's not going to fit in your house, right? And then your wife is going to be really upset with you. So that's the kind of analogy that we use in support. Quite often we might get a support request where someone might say, okay, we're having certain issues or, we're not having predictable performance. And what it might be is they might have SSDs that are unsupported or the wrong class of SSD. Or they might have, an all-flash cluster and they've got their faster SSDs sitting in the wrong tier. So just unsupported environment, it's actually a huge problem for us. It's a huge call driver. And one of the things that we always try to advise people to do is take a look at the VMware compatibility guide before you go purchasing hardware, if you're purchasing hardware for vSAN. Or if you're, if you're a big outfit and you've got some spare servers lying around the place, or you've got some spare controllers or disks and you intend on putting those into your vSAN environment, go ahead and check in the VMware compatibility guide if all of that is supported. And it will tell you, which version of drivers you should have. It will tell you, if those disks are actually supported or not. Because we can't say for sure if you're going to have predictable performance. If we, a lot of the time support are, these people are good guys, right? And they're going to try to assist you as much as possible. So if you're not supported, we do kind of do a best effort basis. However, they will actually say, we can't help you anymore at a certain time.
Sure.
Right? Whereas if you've got a support environment, we're going to follow that through. And even before people implement a vSAN environment, I'd highly recommend taking a look on Storage Hub and stuff like that. Like John Nicholson's paper there on design it's fantastic. It's really, really good. And it's something that we show to our own guys here when we're training people. We say you need to understand how to set vSAN up and what the requirements are. Just simple things like, you can have vSAN hosts in your cluster that are not contributing storage. Is that a best practice? No, it's not. Will it work? Yes, but it's not best practice. And other things like if you've got hosts that have different types of disks, they may all be supported. But if you've different types of disks, again, that can become an issue. So we always try to recommend having a uniform vSAN cluster.
Yeah.
So those are some of the types of things. And, that goes between supported and unsupported and best practices, you know.
Well, it's nothing like starting the show off with a controversial topic, because, and we've done a full episode on this called vSAN Off-Road, but, and yep. Nick, I'm sure you probably have some input on this as well, but I would imagine that some of the calls that you get are based on maybe, and maybe ignorance is too strong of a word, but maybe just someone who didn't even realize that it wasn't supported. But then I would imagine that there's a good majority of folks that have looked in the HCL and have made an intelligent decision that this works and it's going to meet their needs, whether it's for a cost reason or whether it's a performance reason. Nick, have you ever gone off-road, if you will, intentionally?
On a home lab, yes. No. we would never, ever, ever do that in a production environment. We've done it in a pre-production environment, just because we had to get some pieces done. I think the closest we've ever come to doing something like that is using OpenVM tools with NSX before it was whitelisted to do that. But we do have like lower environmental clusters that we do upgrades in. But you know, our upgrade schedule is not as they come. Our upgrade schedule is, we look at each patch that's released, and then we look at major functionality adds, and then the resulting patches after that. So if an update one adds a functionality, we'll wait till update two, the patching of the update one, essentially.
So you guys live really dangerous then, it sounds like, you know, on the edge here. So.
Leading, bleeding.
Well, yeah. Going back to one thing Francis talked about is making sure devices are supported. And I've written some blogs about this in the past, but one thing always I think people need to make sure they understand is the reason things aren't certified isn't because, I don't know, we think we're a country club and we want to be restrictive and, you know, demand all this extensive testing. In many cases with, for instance, the solid state drives, if you go get a consumer class drive, that device is not fully protected for power loss. So you're potentially, if you have a, you know, data center loses power, someone trips over the wrong breaker, you're potentially going to lose rights that were acknowledged. You'll lose data. And so I know a lot of times when people look at support matrices and things like that, there's kind of this attitude of like, well, I mean, this will work, I bet. But there's some very, you know, known hidden risks there. And I can tell you just about every device I've ever seen that wasn't on our HCL, it was an SSD, it's because of that, among, you know, endurance and performance and other reasons, there was a real risk of data loss associated with lack of power loss protection.
And you know what, John, if you want to hear a quick horror story about that actually happening, I can tell you one. Like one morning I got a call from support and I was asked to come work with them on a red escalation. So red escalation, it means, okay, everything is really bad, okay? And I went over to work with the guys in support, and it was a hospital. So straight away, we know, okay, this is going to be something that, you know, we need to get data back as quickly as possible. And what happened was they had, well, basically they told me, look, we've got a lot of VMs that we can't access the data on. And I was like, okay, that's really bad. And I said, what happened? We had an outage overnight. And I'm going, okay. So just like what you're talking about there, John, they had an outage overnight. And guess what? Hardware fails, right? How many people have not had hardware failures in their data center, right? And they brought everything back up. And I said to the guy, okay, which VMs have been affected? And there was ones for their operating theater. There was one for medical records. There was ones for accident and emergency. And I was saying, okay. And just like you're talking about some of those drives, and this was for a hospital, you know, they weren't supported, was one of the issues. I said to the guy on the phone, we prioritized all the VMs and stuff and what we need to get back as quickly as possible, right? And I said, okay, look, I want to, there's one thing that I'm going to ask you, just in case we can't get this data back ourselves here. And I said, do you have backups? And he said, yep, we have backups. And I said, okay, so you have backups for all 10 VMs that you're having issues with? And he said, yeah. And I said, okay. And when was the last time you ran your backup? How often do you run the backups? And the phone went quiet.
We've never tested them, but they run every night.
Exactly.
Schrodinger's backup.
They weren't testing their backups. And literally the ones for their operating theaters, it had been over 3 weeks since they had run a backup, since they'd actually run a successful backup. We just couldn't believe it. And we were like, and this is a hospital. So, you know, when you hear Nick saying, yeah, we do everything by the book. You're the types of customers that we love talking to, Dick, you know. And that other guy that works in the hospital, I guess he's the guy that keeps me in business as well. So there's the good and there's the bad, you know.
I mean, it doesn't always work out that way, but that's definitely our objective going at it.
Absolutely. Look, if you do have a fully supported environment, right, and you've architected well, then vSAN is an absolutely fantastic tool. And you've got tools there like in vSAN 6.6, you've got Config Assist, which will come along. And, you know, I'm sure I know you've done podcasts on what's new in vSAN 6.6, and you covered Config Assist. And, you know, those types of tools that will come along and tell you, hey, this is supported, this is not supported.
Right.
Here's our firmware recommendations and stuff like that. It just takes you don't even have to think about any of that. It just makes life so much easier. And there's so many of these tools that are so beneficial to customers from a vSAN perspective, the amount of tools that we now have, it makes a huge difference from a troubleshooting perspective.
It's also worth noting here, you know, I love these operational tools, Config Assist, to help bring you to that remediated, that supported state, you know, that healthy state. But it's worth noting, you know, when we talk about, you know, doing these unsupported things, I mean, there's nothing really new here under the sun. I mean, you could do some terrible unsupported things, you know, on storage arrays or things that were not best practices. You could make, you know, 92 disk RAID zeros and other exotic things here. So this is something that's just kind of, from an operational process, you need to look at, you know, everything you're doing and identify before you deploy anything, identify your vendor best practices and work through that. Then, like you said, reach out and look at those books and things.
I totally agree. Yeah. And even from that perspective as well, like, what do you do when you're interacting with support as well? So if you have issues, even the way that you're going to open a service request, and I'm sure Nick can talk more to this as well from the customer's perspective, but just even how you define a problem and how you can expedite your service request more quickly or save yourself time. You know, so like we have training classes, we've got a vSAN troubleshooting class for customers that will teach them, you know, how to resolve issues as well themselves. And we give them a lab environment where we break stuff. You've also got hands-on labs and stuff like that that help as well. And you've got really good blogs. You've got Storage Hub. There are some fantastic resources for vSAN. But even, you know, coming back to what you do when something goes wrong, you've got, you know, where are the different sources that they can come from? So you can have config problems, network problems, resource contention, you can have software bugs, hardware failures. You know, you can have failures in so many different areas. And one of the things we always try to explain to our customers is if we have a good description of what the issue is, straight away we're more or less one step ahead. You know, if, you know, can the problem be reproduced? What's the scope of the problems and how many systems are impacted? And was everything working before? Could it be a known problem? That's another thing, because if you come in, you can check for KB articles, you can check release notes, there's community forums, there's loads of places that you can find this information. And I think that's one of the things that's really great about vSAN. So obviously with me working with technical support, we always look at the negative side of everything, right? So we have to be, you know, nobody ever rings tech support to say, hey, everything is working really great, I just thought I should let you know, you know. So we're negative by nature, right? But the cool thing is you realize how many great tools are out there, like the kind of like the stuff that you guys are doing here on the Virtually Speaking podcast. It's really cool. For, you know, I've listened to these, probably to all of them, and I really like them. And I don't know if there are many other companies that give as much information as we do, you know.
Right, but if you have a support issue, I would highly recommend not listening to the podcast to find the answer to the support issue.
Yeah.
Oh man, the server's down. Hold on, let's see what John's got to tell me.
Let's blame Pete and John if you have a problem. Okay,
I see what we're setting us up for.
Nick, you're not the typical customer, I would imagine, because your environment is so, you know, large and fully automated. I'm curious, John and I were talking about, you know, what do you do to handle support well? Like, how do you do support well? I think there should be some some groundwork, right? Like, what have you done in advance in terms of communicating with your customers, but then also making sure that you're expediting the process to get the issue resolved with support? My own experience when I was a network administrator was a nightmare, because you'd have to get on this level one of support call and talk to somebody that's like going through a checklist, and you're like, no, I've already done, no, please skip. I need to get to someone who knows this issue. Like, what is the format? Like, is there something that you can think of that would help folks maybe get through the support process more successfully?
So, you know, we have internal bridges, we have external bridges. So it really depends, and it all boils down to is there impact to a business critical process? And then reflecting on what our SLA is on that BCP. So essentially, if there is no impact, we start up a thing called a technical bridge. And in the technical bridge, we basically have clients that has probably someone sitting there listening, and they might even be leading depending on where our troubleshooting's going. We never, ever, ever put a tier one support engineer on a phone, and we rarely put a tier two support engineer on the phone in front of a client. So if it's a technical bridge, you might end up with a tier two, but most likely you're dealing with a tier three, or we have subject matter experts that are experts and dedicated to the client. So we have like guys that are responsible for their own piece that are redundant and dedicated to the team. And then we also have, you know, just your typical service desks. The dedicated guys, their responsibility is for documenting known outages, known signatures, known events, and then putting it into a guidebook so the tier ones and tier twos can follow. Tier threes do a little bit more thinking, but at that point, we're already escalating for our dedicated guy. And then when it's a really critical system, everyone just breaks down and calls me. So basically what our jobs are is to identify, document, and hand over methods to restore return to service. So it's like an RTS event. And we can hand those off to basically tier two or tier threes. And then in the meanwhile, if that's a technical bridge. Now, if we have a major outage, we have a technical response manager that basically joins a bridge, leads the bridge, and they have a team of two or three people that basically, anytime you say anything on that bridge, say, I need, you know, such and such vendor. I need Visa. I need MasterCard. I need, you know, like Saber holding systems or Sabersonic help desk on this call. Basically, what their job is to do is to drop the bridge, call them, get a representative from whatever the third party business is. And then the TRM also is in charge of sending 30-minute updates. 30-minute updates if it's a major, and 1-hour updates if it's a technical.
Wow. So just one thing to interrupt here. This is something I feel like a lot of people miss in terms of when they're working with support orgs, or just in general with their, you know, when they're the person who's calling support, is making sure you notify the rest of the business. You've got some regular cadence for your updates. In my old org, we typically did 1 hour at a minimum. And that was a phone call or an email you'd established with the customer, the means of contact. And when I say customer, in a lot of cases, that's an internal customer. That's just your manager. Because how many times have you been working an outage, you've been on the phone with a vendor, and someone's breathing over your shoulder, or someone's calling you, and they're like, what's going on? And, you know, system's down, everyone's freaking out. But as long as you establish that cadence of how often you're going to provide that update, you establish the form you're going to be at too. It's a separate, you know, call bridge that's formed or kept open. It's a separate email list. It's a separate, you know, it's a phone call to someone else, and then they fan out. That tends to keep people a lot calmer in a large outage than if it's been 2 or 3 hours and no one knows, is anyone even working on this? That's where people tend to flip out. And these kind of processes and things, I feel like, really help calm things down.
Yeah, I think it's done a really good job. It was very unstructured to begin with, and it was just madness. A lot of times, if it's a major outage, we'll create a technical, non-technical bridge where they'll do the business relays on one bridge and then allow the technical people to talk uninterrupted on the other bridge. And you basically have TRMs that are taking notes. Everything's recorded so they can go back and find out, you know, if there was a breakdown in the process. We actually have a group that analyzes why things took so long, and tracks remediation activities like this.
So Francis and Nick, I guess question trying to break this down a little bit is, when you're working with VMware support, what are some kind of quick tips you have for making sure that's a productive experience? I was going to say, if you've got a TAM, I always say, you know, make sure, you know, talk to them for suggestions. But any just quick tips you can think of, maybe, Francis?
I guess one of the ones that I would always try to do is, we'll say, trying to halve the problem, right? Trying to figure out where the problem is. Is it cluster-wide, or is it just certain VMs on a certain host? From a troubleshooting perspective, are there any hosts in maintenance mode? You know, if there are certain VMs, which objects are actually affected on the virtual machine, right? You know, if it's a couple of virtual machines, is it a certain policy associated with all of those virtual machines? And again, you know, I would always check making sure that everything's on the VMware compatibility guide, that you have the right drivers and firmwares. Like, if it's a performance problem, what type of controllers do you have? What's the queue depth? What mode is the controller in? Because those types of things are very, very important. And another one that I'm a huge believer in is, especially if you look at, we'll say, vSAN, you know, 6.6, right? The health tool, using vSAN Health. So you can either use it in the UI, or you can use a Python script, and you can do that from the ESX server or from the vCenter, right? So even if VC is down, it can really, really help to expedite DSR, because what it does is it will run all of your RVC commands for you. So people that are familiar with the Ruby vSphere console, previously you would have to know all of the commands, you know, and it could take you quite a long time. Now you've got this vSAN Health from the command line. And all you have to do is just go into the user lib VMware vSAN bin folder, and you just have to run, and now I'm just talking off the top of my head, so forgive me for syntax if there's an error, right? But just run vSAN -health-status.pyc and redirect it to whatever text file you want. And then what you can do is you can search down through that. So sometimes, even when you're gathering log bundles, while you're waiting for log bundles to be gathered, you could just run this. And you could take a look through it yourself, and you might be able to find what the issue is. Like, in there, it will show up if there's any host config issues, if there's any healthy or unhealthy object counts, if there's any host networking config issues, shows physical disk summaries, and you can search through all of that. And straight away, it puts you so many steps ahead when you go to try and troubleshoot, because you can actually tell the guy in support, well, I'm having an issue with a certain VM. I can see that, I've got a policy with a failures to tolerate of one. I can see one of my components is in trouble. You know, maybe it's degraded, and I can see that my witness is degraded. And the support person will say to you, well, okay, so you've still got a healthy, active component. It might look like you're not going to be able to get your data back, but we probably will be able to get the data back because we can copy that back. So just those types of things, utilizing those tools, makes a huge difference. It really helps with closing off your SR much, much faster, because you already have that the output of that vSAN Health status command.
Sure.
Well,
sure.
And I like how you mentioned, you know, while you're waiting on your log bundles, some things I've seen, you know, on logs is, one, make sure your logs are going somewhere persistently, making sure you're redirecting that logs if you've got local storage, or to a syslog server, something like Log Insight. Many cases where people can't get a root cause is, but, you know, from my experiences in operations, was because the things weren't logging that needed to, or they were logging to RAM or an, you know, imperial location. The other thing also is, now with vSAN 6.6 or newer, if you have a customer experience improvement program on, you've got basic performance telemetry, basic configuration and health information actually phoning home,
right,
that support can access. So that way, you know, if you've got an environment, something goes boom, so to speak, at least they already have some historical information of what the cluster looked like, what the health state was as it was transitioning potentially, and things like that, that potentially they could bring up.
Yeah, I think that's pretty exciting. We talked to somebody at VMworld. It was Christian Dickman, who was sharing a little bit about some of the futures of vSAN. And I think the name of it was Humbug.
Oh, yeah.
And not a product yet, obviously, but certainly I like the direction they're going with that, where being much more proactive, being able to see your information, not your data, but being able to see, you know, host configuration, you know, the types of drives that are in your environment, you know, things like that, where they can proactively assess a situation and maybe even prevent something from happening as opposed to reactively fix something.
Absolutely. And that tool, it's going to be fantastic. But like by the time it's GA, it's going to be so, so useful. We've done some testing with it internally, and it's a really cool tool. And also with regards to like what John was talking about with the customer experience improvement program, how many people would have loved to seen something like this years ago? You know, you have, let's just say it says that your cluster isn't balanced properly, right? And all you have to do, it tells you your cluster isn't balanced properly, and there's an Ask VMware button. It pops up a knowledge base article. You just click on Ask VMware, and it tells you what the problem is and tells you what the resolution is. That's to have a tool like that, it's so, so useful. I'm sure from Nick's perspective, if you guys had an issue and you can click on Ask VMware and tells you what the answer is, I'm sure that's going to make life quite easy, right?
Yeah, that would be phenomenal.
In Nick's case, though, there should be a button that says Ask Nick, because Nick probably already has the like answer.
wake up, Nick. Totally, that totally happened this morning.
I'm surprised given the fact that, yeah, you've got 24-hour call on some things. Like, they haven't gotten one of those IoT embedded things to where they can strobe all the Philips Hue bulbs in your light in your house, you know, like disco style to wake you up. Like, somewhere in operations, there's a wake up Nick button and it starts strobing, and, you know, it sets his, you know, his Amazon Alexa to start blasting volume 10.
I was thinking more of a taser, but yeah.
Just, I guess, metallic strips just woven into the fabric of my bed. Okay.
Get your ass up. Yeah.
I would roll straight on the ground. Like, I'm sleeping on the floor now.
But you know what? Another thing I was just talking about there as well was the, you know, if you had an imbalance in the cluster, it was just a point that I just made, right? Was like, for example, from an architecture point of view, we know that under the covers you've got CLOM, right? Cluster Level Object Manager, and that's kind of like the architect for vSAN, and it takes care of the balance of the cluster. And, you know, we previously had a service request where someone couldn't create a VM, and I said there wasn't enough space in the cluster, that we, you know, they didn't have the capacity. And by the time we jumped on the call 3 or 4 hours later, when we tried to create the VM, we were able to create the VM. We didn't have the capacity issue, and nothing had changed. And what was after happening under the covers was CLOM was after doing its job. It was the architect, and it said, okay, let's move some stuff around under the covers. So just like in 6.6, you have that proactive rebalance, and you can tell it to go and do the rebalance for you, and it will rebalance under the covers. And obviously, you have to be aware of what happens from a resync perspective, because, you know, we're talking about some of the things that we see from a vSAN perspective. And one of the issues that we have is what happens when a resync is being performed, right? You know, you're going to have performance degradation, and, you know, because at the end of the day, you're having to re-protect your data if you're doing a resync. So, like, I sometimes talk about it, it's kind of like DNA replication, that you have to have everything replicated. It has to be the exact same way. And understanding, you know, there's other things as well that will kick off resyncs if you change your policy. And you need to understand as well your policies and the effects of changing your policy. Sometimes people think, oh, I'm just going to change my policy, and I'm going to change it for 30 different virtual machines. I've created a new policy and we're going to add Stripe with. Well, guess what? That's going to take up a lot of space.
Oh, yeah.
Just because you're changing the Stripe width, it doesn't mean that you just have to create an extra copy. That's not the way it works. You know, from a failure to tolerate, if you have to create another mirror, if you're increasing your failures to tolerate, then yes, you're just creating another copy, and you have to do your resync, and, you know, you have to sync to your new copy. But if you're changing Stripe width or something like that, watch out for those types of things, because you have to create completely a couple of new mirrors. So that's something you need to be aware of as well.
I've always recommended, you know, people, if they're looking at a new policy, is build a new policy, then migrate VMs over to that policy. Try a couple at first, or one or two, and then you can kind of increase that volume once you get a feel for that. And again, nothing new is under the sun here. If you tried to change RAID levels on a storage array back in the day, it was a pretty IO-intensive process.
Oh, yeah.
And it required you have capacity for that migration or that clone and things like that. You had to have swing storage. So it's cool you don't have to go deploy a whole, you know, swing cluster for this process. But obviously, you know, IO isn't free. You know, it comes at a cost. And so try to limit the scale of that. Jeff Hunter, I think, has got a great blog on VirtualBox describing the capacity considerations for those changes too. So go read that.
Yeah, that's that blog is actually really good. Another thing about that as well, with regards to your vSAN resyncs, there's, again, I'm talking obviously from the negative point of view all of the time, right? But I really like vSAN, just so you know. But I have to talk about where some of the issues can be. You know, just avoid things like, if you know there's a resync going on, you can obviously run the vSAN.resync dashboard from inside an RVC, and that will tell you if there's any resyncs going on, right? But just some of the things to avoid during resync is make sure you don't go rebooting any hosts unless it's a compute-only node. Don't put any hosts into maintenance mode or change any advanced parameters. And don't remove any disks or anything like that from the vSAN cluster. And obviously, while all that's going on, some of the proactive things that you can do is, just monitor the resync dashboard. That's definitely one of the things that I would be saying to watch out for.
So don't reboot a host during a resync. Okay, I got to take these notes, right, John?
So don't. I thought the solution to all problems was just keep rebooting everything reboot it over and over until it works.
Yeah. Like,
Nick, that's how they fix airplanes, right? They just turn them on and off again a lot.
It's not responding. Sure. Just reboot it.
For sure.
You wouldn't believe how often we see it.
That's what Nick does. When they call Nick, they all think he has all the answers. He's really just rebooting hosts.
More often than not, I'm getting called because someone already rebooted the host.
I don't want to wake Nick up again. I'll just reboot the host.
My favorite was well, there were cluster-wide alerts, so we turned off, and it was a four-node cluster. So we went ahead and just threw everything into maintenance mode without any regards to, vSAN at all. They're like, what do you mean the disks are in read only? It's like, I don't even know how these VMs are up right now.
And now that guy's like, would you like fries with that?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think our challenge is basically we need to figure out a way to do it automatically. We have problems with, SD card boots. So it's really prevented us from using a lot of the, update manager based rollouts. And so you have to have an engineer that makes sure the data is safe the entire time we're going through a patching process.
You brought up another one of my favorite recommendations. Going forward, don't use SD cards. Look for SATA DOMs, M.2 boot devices. That way, one, you get local logs, and two, just SD cards have seen some interesting large groups of failures and so forth. So,
well, I mean, that's great, but it was the standard two years ago when we built the architecture, and so having something change like that, it brings down. Hey, operationally, you make a lot of sense, but who's paying for that?
Yeah.
What group?
It's not cheap. All right, cool. I think this was a good start. John, we talked about this, and I really think we should do it. I think we could do an entire episode literally just dedicated to the what to do before you call support and how to handle that whole process, and then have like a whole nother section just on things, specific to the different technologies like vSAN, and then maybe a whole one on vSphere. I think we could probably have a mini series on how to do support well within like a five-part.
Yeah, make sure your monitoring's good, how to, automate your backup test. There's all kinds of things you should be doing to set yourself up so when you do have to call support, it's a much less scary experience. So that's a good idea.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Nick, Francis, I think we're winding up. Is there anything else you guys want to input before we land this plane?
Fantastic. I don't have anything else. But if you're going to have some follow-up podcasts or anything like that, I'm happy to help out with any of that. A lot of these things we've talked about, they're very basic. Just basic pre-checks, and they make life easier for you. And as I say, look at 6.6, vSAN 6.6, how useful it is, how easy it is for customers to troubleshoot using 6.6. And also, vSAN Health, I'd be highly recommending that. They would be the two key takeaways. And make sure you test your backups.
Yeah.
that would be my final note.
Yeah. Backups are boring. It's the restores that are exciting, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on your app of choice by searching V Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Big thanks to Francis and Nick for joining us this week. You guys are my heroes. And until next week, bye for now.
Oh, yeah.
Enough of this jibber jabber.